Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 18th day of June, 2010. What do we do about the markets now? It's been a wet June. The corn looks good, or maybe bad. The soybeans the same way, and, well, wheat is having a tough time if you're further north. We'll try to figure it all out a bit later here on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, not much later, we'll talk with John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures out of Memphis, Tennessee. Our panelists in studio today include Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Ellen Dearden of Ag Review in Morton, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's start our discussion with this question. Matt Bennett, what was the most often asked question you received from farmers this past week?
Should I go ahead and push my corn sales? I think a lot of guys in our area are really happy with the way their corn crop looks, and they're wondering where they're not only price some old corn they might have sitting around, but how far should they push their new crop sales? A lot of guys in our area feel like we're pretty good unless we get extreme heat as far as getting the corn pollinated, because we're sitting with an abundance of moisture right now. It's almost a greenhouse environment. And so, you know, they feel pretty good about their yield prospects, and they're just kind of wondering how far do they push their sales.
Ellen Dearden of Ag Review.
Boy, I can sure tell a big difference between what crops look like in different areas, because the big question that I got this week on the corn side was, should I be long these futures and how long should I be? And how long should I be staying long?
And Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
We had everything. Our crops in general look good, but you got wet areas. But in general, is the corn going to go back to 390 or 95 like some people are talking? Or are we at it like the five-year charts say? And I had a lot of guys that unloaded finally this week a bunch of their old corn for sale. But people are wondering how much further it'll go before they pull the trigger. Some started pulling, some today.
Ellen, I have to know, when they asked you, should they be long the futures, what did you say? Did you say you're already long the futures if you've got a crop in the field, or did you add to it?
We're long some calls, but we have been short futures for a long time.
All right, what do you think we should do in this marketplace? You ready to sell a crop?
Well, I think it depends on the individual situation. I have a really hard time predicting what this market's going to do from one day to the next. We don't really know what we're going to be trading, whether it's something going on in the world or whether it's the true fundamentals, which we seldom trade, it seems like, anymore. So my thing is, if you've got an excellent crop growing and you feel like you can make money at what your price is as far as an average yield goes, if you're better than average, why aren't you making some sales? I don't know where the price is going to go from here. I have a tendency to think that if we go ahead and have decent weather through pollination in July, that we'll have some weakness in this market. So maybe I'd want to go ahead and price some, but I certainly feel like doing nothing would probably be one of the worst things a person could do right now.
Here's the way some of the numbers finished up on the week. Remember, we give you the high, the low, and it's a composite overnight and day trade. In the corn pit, July had a high this week of $3.64 and a quarter, a low at $3.48 and a half. The settlement price was up 11 and a quarter cents at $3.60 and three quarters from Friday to Friday. In December, the new crop, a $3.80 and a half settlement price, up 9 and a half cents. July wheat for the week, $4.70 the high, the low at $4.41 and three quarters, a settlement price at $4.61 and three quarters, a gain of 21 cents. And the July 11 wheat at $5.69 and three quarters, up 17 and a half. And July oats, 263, up 36 cents on the week. Pete, what did you tell producers about making sales for the week for corn?
Well, it depends on how much they got sold. I've got guys that already sold a bunch that are waiting another dime to 15, but I've got guys that haven't started that did start selling this week. And when you look at this week's move, you got to realize that corn at the high to this week was up 33 over the low of 7 to 8 days ago, and beans were up 40 some. So we've had a big move up. If you hadn't sold any, we had guys selling. If they've already sold a lot, they might have been looking at puts on covering some additional.
Matt, tell me about the crops on your farm.
Crops on our farm and in our surrounding area, for the most part, are excellent. We, you know, we didn't get any huge rains early on like a lot of people did, so, you know, we didn't have a lot of ponds. Now, of course, we have some ponds because we had 5 inches in 3 or 4 days here this past week, but for the most part, the corn was big enough that I don't think it's going to be affected dramatically. Some of the beans might be affected a little bit, but I'd say in our area, considering what we were looking at coming into the spring and some of the fears that we had, I couldn't be any happier.
When you look out, Ellen, at the weather market, do you think there's a possibility that things might dry off and that would have a much of an impact early on in the Southwest? They had a pretty hot, dry spell, and it looks like it's building to come into the West at some point.
It looks like it's building, and the weather guy that I follow is really talking about that high pressure and heat moving further east, not particularly north, but further east, and I think that will certainly impact soybean yields as we look at the Mid-South and Southeast more so than the corn.
Yeah, so that puts Kansas, Missouri, Arkansas right in the dead center.
Right in line for lots of heat, and that will extend all the way over into the Carolinas.
That's a long shot. Maybe it's a good time now to bring John Bondurant into our conversation a bit early. Mr. Bondurant, of course, from Bondurant Futures in Memphis, Tennessee. John, thanks for being on the show today.
It's a pleasure.
Tell me about your farm. What do you see?
Well, I went over my biggest farm today, this morning. It's a big farm, so it covers 25 acres, 25 miles, sort of. Dryland beans, where we hadn't had a rain 3 weeks, are knee-high and just about to start burning. And where we had big rains, they're waist-high and absolutely loaded. Of course, the irrigated beans look real good. We got a lot of irrigation. So, in general, I was not impressed with the crops.
John, for your crop, compared to other years, are you in good shape, bad shape, average, even with all the highs and lows?
Well, probably above average, I would guess. The last year we had a fantastic crop and fully rained on us, but maybe a little above average.
I'd like to ask everybody to think about the wheat market just a bit. It's been sort of interesting to watch because of what's happened in Canada. And then oats along with it as it's run up. And maybe we can finish with you, John, but we'll start here. And what do you see with the wheat market and its impact on the rest of the grains, Matt?
Well, you know, a lot of traders will say sometimes wheat and oats might be a little bit of an indicator ahead of time of the way the rest of the grains are going to move. And I guess seeing the strength in the wheat market right now, considering, you know, there's still stocks issues, we have a plenty worldwide. I think, to me, it just is a good sign for the rest of the commodities. I feel like it's a good thing. Maybe I'm not so bullish corn and beans if we have normal summer weather. But, you know, whenever you look at some of the outside influences like wheat, I think it maybe gives you a little bit of a room to be a little bit bullish.
I mean, we always talk about wheat's grown, you know, all the time, and there's wheat being harvested every day of the year. And the thing that I noticed is that we seem to have wheat crop problems this year in several areas of the Northern Hemisphere. And, you know, that hasn't been the case for an awfully long time. I've been impressed with the wheat. Wheat's kind of led the other grains beginning a couple weeks ago. Then oats hopped into that position a week ago. But I thought that the wheat sell-off at the close on Friday looked a little bit tenuous. We were actually down just a hair.
Yeah, and Illinois, southern Indiana, clear into Ohio this year has very little wheat. That's where a lot of the wheat acres didn't get planted that got put to corn or beans. So I think wheat, could help drag the corn, but I'm kind of in the boat that we might have seen about all we're going to see out of the wheat unless it really affects Kansas and Oklahoma and on up with bad moisture.
John?
I guess my take on wheat is it's not profitable, and you're going to have a hard time getting acreage planted at these price levels. So I kind of think we've seen the low on wheat. You know, you see things like the Ukraine's bean acreage is up 50%. Well, gee, why shouldn't it be? If you're raising wheat and beans, and wheat's yields about the same as beans and costs less to produce, and the bean price is twice as high. So I would think that wheat's probably pretty in the bottom.
You know, the University of Illinois and its Ag Econ Studies took a look at acreage after Freedom to Farm in the mid-90s and the shift from wheat in the United States to corn and soybeans. So is this coming to fruition? And does that mean, in your sense, John, that while wheat might be willing to move higher, that corn and soybeans might not follow as much as people think?
Yeah, I'd go for that. I think the market is telling us not. I mean, I was hedged a lot of wheat for next year, and I pulled all my hedges this last week around 550 in July 11, but it just doesn't pencil. So I would think that what's going on in the upper Midwest and in other places in my area is, you know, beans are more profitable, a lot more profitable.
Switching gears a bit, John, you heard us talking a little bit about corn and what producers are thinking in our neck of the woods. What's your take on the corn market? There's a lot that's going to happen here coming up as far as acreage and, you know, pollination's right around the corner. You know, there could be some pretty big price moves, and I think guys are getting a little nervous. You know, you have any advice for us here?
I have no interest in the short side of corn, and I'll tell you why. I really think with what's happening in the Gulf of Mexico, that they're going to do the ethanol mandate and change it from 10 to at least 12, although today they're putting the decision off to this fall. But if they do, that's a 20% increase from 10 to 12. That's about 900 million bushels of corn. Take 4.6 billion bushels using this year, roughly, times 20%, so over 900 million. Then you get back a third of that in DDG, so the net is about 600 million bushels more of corn. So let's say the corn carryover right now is about 1.6 million for next new crop. And let's say the crop is super, super, and it's 400 million higher, 168 yield. And then let's pop up the ethanol 500 million, and all of a sudden you're back to 1.5 billion carryover using 14 billion bushels. And the South needs to plant corn, and we're not going to plant corn because it's the least profitable crop. So I think if you are 1.5 billion carryover or less, that's pipeline. And so I just have no interest in it. I didn't plant an acre of corn this year, and around here there's almost no corn, no milo, simply economics. They don't make any money off of it. So I'm not a bear on corn at all.
Do you think that U.S. EPA looked at it and said, maybe we better take some more time in it? It's not the 12, but we might need to consider 15, and they came under pressure from somebody in the administration to go back and look at it and say, you can do 12, or go back and look at it and say, let's see if 15 actually works.
Gosh, I think 15 blows the corn market out. We just flat don't have the acreage for 15. 15's a 50% increase. That's 2.3 billion bushels extra corn. Where we get it? Where we find the acres to get it? So I'd be surprised to see them go to 15. I really would. I just think that we get back in that story about taking away feed for animals and pushing up human prices for meats, et cetera. But 12, I think, tightens it up a lot. 15 would make it intolerable. So I just don't like the short side of corn here.
What about the short side of beans?
I'm still a bear on beans.
So you're either selling it or having hedges or puts on it?
No, I've had hedges on for so long, it's boring.
Okay.
No, $10 beans are just a super price. You make a lot of money. If you're sitting down here with irrigation, you think you can make 60, 70, 75 bushels an acre. I mean, there's nothing comes close unless it's rice.
Soybeans, by the way, this week finished with a high in the July at $9.64, a low at $9.44 3/4. Settlement price was up 14 3/4 at $9.61. November beans at $9.30 5/2, up 21 1/4. We'll come back to the soybeans in the second half of the program. When you look out further in corn, are you a willing seller anywhere in 2011 or further out if you can make those sales? I'm going to make an assumption not, but John?
No. Anybody? Absolutely. In my area, it's the least profitable, aside from wheat, it's the least profitable crop. So I see no future in corn acreage in the South.
So I guess, John, if you're looking at looking forward, in our neck of the woods, obviously there's a lot of switching going back and forth.
Right.
Do you think that do you feel like acreage is going to be capped at around 90-91?
Well, it depends on what they do with the CRP. I mean, if you don't change the CRP, it's just a take from one crop and add it to the other type deal. And it depends on ethanol. If they come in with ethanol, I feel like you got to have another 5 million acres of corn.
We're talking with John Bondurant this afternoon, along with Matt Bennett and Pete Manhart and Alan Dearden. More here on Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media in just 2 minutes.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Humid air, a frontal boundary, and upper-level waves combined to produce widespread thunderstorms this week. It has been a very wet week across Illinois as thunderstorms repeatedly developed and dumped large amounts of rain in many locations. 2 to 5 inches of rain have fallen in the last week across central and east central Illinois, as well as in far west central Illinois. Elsewhere, 1/2 to 1 inch of rain fell. The frequent heavy rain has left water standing in fields and in ditches as the soil is saturated in many areas. The rain totals in much of central Illinois are already over the normal monthly June rainfall totals. There was a large variation in temperatures across the state this week. Temperatures were near normal in northern Illinois, but increased to almost 7 degrees above normal in southern Illinois. The warm temperatures combined with high dew points made for a generally uncomfortable week. We are not looking for a big change in the weather for the next week, as temperatures will remain generally above normal and the air will be moist. While it will be very warm and humid, only widely scattered showers and thunderstorms are possible during the week until about Thursday, when thunderstorms could be a little more numerous. In the meantime, the upper-level ridge should keep most rain activity suppressed. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 18th day of June, 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our panelists in studio include Matt Bennett of Total Grain Marketing out of Windsor, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Ellen Dearden of AgReview out of Morton, Illinois. On the phone line today with us is John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures. He's in Memphis, Tennessee. Matt Bennett, just before we closed, we had asked whether corn sales for 2011 were something you'd be interested in doing of John Bondurant, and he said no. How about you?
Well, I think making sales on increments is not always a bad thing. I think, I'm not super bearish corn by any means, but on the other hand, I think that if you can set in a decent price, I would sell some. Now, I would also keep in mind that, whenever we have these wild swings in commodity markets, if we don't maybe sell some of our output at the same time that we're locking in some of our inputs, we're setting ourselves up for disaster, and it hasn't been so long ago that guys got bit pretty hard by that. So I don't think I'd get myself too out of equilibrium there.
Seems to me that we're just right into the time frame where you ought to put a 68-month low in this corn, and that doesn't say to sell crop years ahead. We have sold some 2011 crop corn, but nothing out further than that.
Oh, we sold it back when it was over $4. And if it got back over $4, we'd consider some. But that's in the, when cash would be over $4. So you're talking up to $4.30, $4.40 in the our world to get that kind of cash.
John, tell me about the difference in the way you view the corn market and the soy market at this point.
Well, simplistically, it looks like you've got a record world bean carryover as a percent of usage, which, generally speaking, isn't worth $9 or $10. Corn, it's somewhere around 27, 28, 29%, depending on what you want to put, which numbers you're playing with on demand side. Corn carryover is more like 17%. So I look at one and say, my gosh, what's bearish about 17 and what's bullish about 28? And I know that's simplistic, but that's the way I, as a speculator, think of things. And corn's had a huge decline, and beans are still hanging in there. And if you look forward, South America is certainly not going to plant a lot of corn at these prices with beans where they are. So I would expect the market is sending a pretty clear signal to continue to raise beans and oilseed and not corn.
Do you think in the bean market that there's recognition within the market but not the community yet that the demand curve shifted to the right with the Chinese purchases up front last fall, and will they do it again? And might that be the reason that beans are still as high as they are?
Well, that's a good point. And they're buying a lot of soybean oil right now. That brings another real question is, what are the Chinese stocks? I mean, if you think back in 2004, the Chinese told the USDA that, oh, we have 20 million tons more of corn and 50 million tons more of rice, and that's a communist government speaking. And right now you got corn prices in China double up what they are in the U.S., and we're their big reserves. So probably the most bullish thing I could think of is if all the reserves in China are overstated, and you know they're supposedly going to resurvey all those things. And here's cotton way up in price. China supposedly has an enormous cotton carryover, yet cotton prices in China are over $1 a pound, which is huge. So I keep wondering about that.
John, I got a question for you on these beans. You're short beans, basically, and I agree with you on your rationale with the bean market, and it seems to me like I've been expecting the bean market to move fairly lower for some time now. At what point does the bean market say, you know what, worldwide we've got plenty of supply, you know, what point do you think that we're going to figure that out, and where are we going with the bean market?
Well, if you think back a year ago in March, we were saying the same thing about wheat. And well, how in the world can wheat stay up with all this big crop? And all of a sudden, it just fell out of bed for no particular reason. And I don't know what's going to happen. I must say I'm quite concerned about the weather here. I mean, we're really hot and dry. It's been up over 100, and it hadn't rained in the south like you were talking about in the weather forecast. I think Ellen was talking about. Doesn't look real pretty for dryland beans in the south. And this is crop scare season, and beans are one of those things that everybody gets excited about because they move so violently. But fundamentally, I don't think they should be over $6.
Wow. So are you really bearish the beans on the meal side or the oil side? What's going to be the bigger factor there?
I would guess the meal side because the animal numbers don't do much. I mean, you've got broiler chick sets are staying at 2% up. Hog numbers are about 4% down. Cattle on feed for the first time today is 1% up after being 4% down last month because a year ago we had terribly low placements. But there's no momentum in the animal numbers that I see, so I guess I'd have to be on the meal side.
Because certainly the bean oil is competitively priced right now with palm oil and some of the other competitive oils, which is probably spurring these recent sales.
And also you've got this trade dispute between Argentina and China. It may well be that they're simply buying more oil from the U.S. and the oil that Argentina was going to sell to China are going to sell to somewhere else, and we won't make that sale, so it might be a circular deal.
Len, and talking about beans here, would you be a seller then or a hedger, or have you already of the 11 or 12 crop at 950 or above?
Oh, I've been short hedged beans for so long, it's ridiculous.
And out years.
I'm short 25% of next year's production at $10 in November 11, and I'm short 90% of this year's production at also around $10.
All right, let's move to U.S. acreage. Informa brought its numbers out. We're due at the end of the month to have USDA's numbers out, which they say should be what we planted. I'm sure there'll be some discussion about whether that'll be the case or not. Informa now says that 89.3 for corn. That's from the up from the 88.8 that was put out by USDA in March on the 30th as the planting intentions report. And for soybeans, they're saying 78.8 million acres. That is also higher than the 78.1 million acres that USDA predicted in the month of March. What did you think of the numbers?
Well, I don't know what to think of the numbers the way this spring's gone. There was a while that I thought that the corn acreage was going to be boosted, and then, you know, we went through a wet, cold spell, and, you know, I guess I've been in disarray. I feel like Informa's probably not too far from the truth. I've been thinking it'd be pretty tough for us to get to 90, given the way this spring has been as a whole.
I'm not sure the planted acres are going to be all that meaningful. We got to be looking at these harvested acres.
I think that if you look at their numbers, they actually lowered their corn number 300,000 and raised their bean number 300,000. Basically, it was about an even. My question is, where'd those 4 million of wheat acres go to that the government has said are not been planted to anything? And I still think that those got planted to something, and they probably got planted to corn or beans.
John?
I agree with I think that there's more acres to be found, and I personally think the corn acreage is a little lower than REFCO, and the bean acreage is probably near 80 million. Just simply, they haven't all shown up.
So you think the acres that that disappeared will come back?
Yes.
But historically, those things have come and gone pretty often.
Well, there's a fair tendency to find a lot of bean acreage from March to June intentions.
All right, a final word from you, John, on what the producer ought to be thinking about this week in the corn and the soybean market.
It's a big weather market, but if I think it ought to be hedged fairly decently in beans and corn. I don't have any desire to be hedged here.
John Bondurant is with Bondurant Futures out of Memphis, Tennessee. Matt Bennett is with Total Grain Marketing in Windsor, Illinois. Matt?
I think there's a lot of volatility ahead. There's the potential that we will get, you know, somewhat of a surprise with acreage, and I'd just say get some bushels priced if you feel very comfortable about your crop.
Ellen Dearden is with AgriView out of Morton, Illinois.
Next week would be the third week up after a bottom, and that's the first Fibonacci number we're looking at, and probably see a setback from that.
And Pete Manhart is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
Hot, dry weather forecast can push things up tremendously. A world economic mess can push it down tremendously.
You have been listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason with this reminder. You can always visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find our daily agricultural programming, including the pre-opening and the opening closing market reports, along with a midday update and this program, Commodity Week. It's all at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You have a good and a very safe week.